love and greetings from the depth of my heart to all of you. Welcome to today's discourse, which is the fifth in the series of talks on the wisdom of Bhagavad Gita as interpreted by Paramahamsa Yogananda in his book God Talks with Arjuna. Just to quickly review what we have discussed in the last four discourses, we are all convinced that we are all different expressions of the same divinity. I am a spark of God, as you are. But I lost the divine kingdom in the game of delusion, as Pandavas lost their kingdom in the game of dice. After losing their kingdom, Pandavas had to go into exile for 13 years. After serving the term of exile 13 years, they came back and demanded the kingdom which belonged to them morally and legally. But Kaurava, sitting here in Hastinapur, denied. Having left with no other option, Kauravas declared a war, and hence this Kurukshetra war. I am also banished from my divine kingdom as I am under the spell of delusion, Maya. And I am living as a mere mortal. Incarnation after incarnation, I am just living like this. But when I realize that my kingdom is within, that is divine kingdom, full of love and joy and wisdom, I want it back. But my mere wanting back my real kingdom is not adequate. Because the Kaurava sitting in me, the negative tendencies like ego, jealousy, pride, habits, these are Kaurava sitting in me, they are preventing me to get back my kingdom. So I have to declare a war, the Kurukshetra within, to defeat my evil tendencies by my good inclinations. So that is the Kurukshetra within, going on all the time. Paramahamsa Yogananda gave one assurance. He wrote, each person has to fight his own battle of Kurukshetra. It is a war not only worth winning, but in the divine order of the universe and of the eternal relationship between the soul and God, a war that sooner or later must be won. So a war that must be won as per cosmic design, as per God's wish. It's just a question of sooner or later. Let it be sooner. Let's make it sooner. So that is the Kurukshetra war we are waging inside. We studied the first sloka, which tells us the fundamental truth that life is a series of battles between ignorance and wisdom, soul and body, discrimination and the senses, self-control and temptation, and the like. It's always a war, series of wars going on. And the import of the first sloka is that each night, every sincere devotee has to introspect and see how his good tendencies and bad tendencies were in the battlefield of life. Like Sanjay, who represents honest introspection, revealed to Dhritarashtra the blind mind. So we have to introspect ourselves to know what is happening. The second sloka gives us a warning. The summary reads, thus we find the second sloka of the Gita forewarning the spiritual aspirant that King Duryodhana, material desire, will try to arouse man's Drona sense habit tendencies to fight against the soul forces of discrimination. The bad habits are inside. So, the warning here is that whenever a devotee realizes the importance of spiritual practices like meditation, that time the past bad habits try to prevent him, because the material desire inside gets alarmed. This person is going now spiritual way. So, I may lose control over this body and may not be satisfied anymore. So, disgrace him. So, it asks past habit, that is Dronacharya, to disgrace him. That's why oftentimes when we are about to meditate, then we remember the many important things we have to do at that time. That is Dronacharya, past habit, trying to dissuade us. But there is hope. Because Dronacharya was guru of not only Kauravas, he was also guru of Pandavas. Meaning, habit could be bad or it could be even good. So, let us cultivate the good habits, and same Dronacharya, the same habit will help us to win this Kurukshetra war. In spiritual practices, especially in meditation, that Dronacharya is regularity. That's a habit, good habit. If we cultivate that regularity in our meditations, half the battle is won. So, it's very important. Next, the third sloka explains that when material desire and his army of sense tendencies and their restless thoughts try to reinforce themselves by past material habit, in order to dissuade the spiritual aspirant from the practice of meditation, they find that the calm inner light of awakening intuition, well trained in meditation by past spiritual habit, has effectively arrayed the discriminative faculties to give metaphysical resistance. It's very simple to understand this. Every devotee by nature has that inner urge to progress spiritually by regular sadhana. Like every student would like to study regularly in order to have a prosperous career. But unfortunately, the habits of procrastination, laziness, the tendency to have instant sense gratification oppose the spiritual practices, sadhana, regular studies by students. But again, there is hope. These habits can be conquered, not only conquered temporarily, they can be rooted out completely. For that, what is required is the calm inner light of intuitive awakening. Means that conviction has to come, which intuitively sees for the future. This habit is not going to help me in the long run. So, that conviction has to come from inside, so that it can be rooted out. The calm intuitive, that the awakening, is represented by Drushtadyumna, who fought on behalf of Pandavas. And he is the one eventually who killed Dronacharya, the habit. So, we have to also generate that awakening, conviction inside, calm inner light of intuitive awakening. How? By spiritual practices. Because Drushtadyumna came out of fire after his father, Drupada, did intense sadhana, intense tapas. Then he came out of fire to help him. Similarly, I have to do intense sadhana, then that awakening comes inside, conviction, so that with that I can conquer my habits. Next, we studied slokas 4, 5 and 6. Here one basic principle you have to understand. The five Pandavas could not have won the war by themselves. They needed help, the help of many allies. Many kings came forward to help them, support them. Like Drupada, Virata, Kashi Raja, Kunti Bhoja and the like. Similarly, my self-control and pranayam, yam niyam alone are not adequate to win this Kurukshetra within. I require the support of other spiritual qualities like devotion, spiritual memory, pranayam and discriminative intelligence. And these things are the spiritual effects a devotee gathers by regular practice of yoga meditation. Meaning, one need not necessarily be born with the spiritual qualities like devotion and intelligence and spiritual memory, pranayama, etc. One can gather by the practice of regular meditation. So, as we practice spiritual sadhana, these qualities come up to our aid. They can be cultivated even if we don't have them in full strength as we go along. And in slokas 7 and 8, Paramahansa Yogananda points out the Kauravas about whom a devotee must be wary, because they represent specific principles that oppose spiritual progress, like avidya, illusion, ego, habit, attachment, repulsion, latent desire. These are there inside. We should be aware of their existence and conquer them. Like Pandavas had to face formidable, very strong opponents like Bhishma, Drona, Karna, Vikarna, Aswatthama, like that. We also have to face. Now, we will study the sloka 9. First, let us listen to the sloka sung by Swami Vasudevananji.
Anne cha bahavah shura madathe tyakta jivitah nana shastra praharanah sarve yuddha visharadah anne cha bahavah shura madathe tyakta jivitah nana shastra praharanah sarve yuddha visharadah.
The plain meaning as given by Gurudeva Paramsaji, Duryodhana continues, and numerous other warriors, all well trained for battle and armed with various weapons, are here present, ready for my sake to lay down their lives. Recall that Duryodhana first explained the warriors ready to fight for Pandavas. And then in sloka 7 and 8, he narrated the list of warriors ready to fight for him. And he continues here. Those 8 warriors we saw last time, like Karna, Vikarna, Bhishma, Drona, Somadatti, Aswatthama, Drona, like that we have seen. Now he says there are more. And here Guruji's words, very, very informative. Guruji wrote, Here is introduced a specialized grouping of Kaurava forces. Lest the reader feel perplexed as at another list, he should rather let his thought process merge with those of the saints, ancient and modern, who realize that yoga is a science demanding exactitude in definition. Here, we are trying to understand the life of a yogi. I mean, that is you and me. Life of a yogi with a mission. You have a mission, I have a mission. That self-realization. Also to live a life free from pain and suffering. And to live in that perpetual joy. It is possible. For a yogi, it is possible. Because yoga is a science of how the soul descended from spirit into this flesh and identified with this body and its environment and the objects, and how it can reascend to spirit. That is the science of yoga, descending and ascending. Now we are in the phase of ascending. And this list consists of 6 persons. Shat repose. Shat repose meaning 6 enemies. When the ego has sided with the materialistic force of creation, it is said to have 6 faults. What are they? Kama krodha, lobha moha, madhamascharya. Kama means lust, desire. Krodh, anger. Lobh, greed. Moh, delusion, temptation. And then madha, pride. Mascharya, jealousy. I mean, these are the 6 enemies we have to fight within. And this desire, anger, greed, temptation, pride and jealousy are very easy for us to see in others. Sometimes very difficult to see within. No, that's why we need to study their characteristics. How sometimes they are in disguise inside. First, let us take kama, lust, represented by Duryodhana. Guruji wrote, in the name and guise of fulfilling one's needs, ego lures man to continuous seeking of self-satisfaction, resulting in suffering and vexation. What would content the soul is forgotten. And the ego goes on endlessly trying to satisfy its insatiable desires. Mark these words. How much it applies to each one of us. What would satisfy the ego? What would satisfy the soul is forgotten. And the ego starts gratifying desires again and again endlessly. So, what satisfies the soul is forgotten. I mean, that's why all the problems. And these coercive materialistic desires, they are the instigator of man's wrong thoughts and actions. It's not a simple desire having inside. This desire will drive the man into wrong thoughts and wrong actions. I mean, that is the problem. The perfect exemplar is Duryodhana. And those of us who know the story of Mahabharata well understand this, how Duryodhana represents the desire, lust. And Guruji wrote about this. He said, lust applies to the abuse of any or all the senses in the pursuit of pleasure or gratification. Through the sense of sight, man may lust after material objects. Easy to understand? It is sight that sees something and desire starts. It could be a beautiful house, a car, a dress, or whatever it is. Something we see and eye brings some information and starts a desire. Through the sense of sight, man may lust after material objects. through the sense of hearing, he craves the sweet, slow poison of flattery and voices and music that rouse his material nature. Now, we all want to listen some good things about ourselves, you know, flattery, so sweet, flattering. Through the lustful pleasure of smell, he is enticed towards wrong environments and actions. Lust for food and drink causes him to please his taste at the expense of health. We all understand that. Through the sense of touch, he lusts after inordinate physical comfort and abuses the creative sex impulse. Guruji goes on. Lust also seeks gratification in wealth, status, power, dominion, all that satisfies the I, me, mine in the egotistical man. I, me, mine. No, this is mine. I am greater. Like that. I, me and mine, so strong and egotistical, egoistic man. Lust destroys one's happiness, health, brain power, clarity of thought, memory and discriminative judgment. So, this strong desire, lust, calm has to be destroyed. If you are to have a life free from pain and suffering and self-realization. And Duryodhana, life is full of this desire for kingdom. Not only the desire for having control over kingdom, he also has the desire to suppress people he didn't like. Pandava should not exist, or they should exist as slaves. That desire so strong that's the cause of the war. That strong egoistical desire. And he won't even know sometimes. I have a short story. One boy, maybe about 10, he had a pet, a turtle. You know, he used to take care of it. He would spend a lot of time with the turtle. One day, he saw the turtle motionless. He tapped. No response, it's dead. He was heartbroken. No one could console him. People were offering other pets, this, that, nothing would work. He was inconsolably weeping, crying. Then his father got an idea and offered something. Kumar, whatever happened. Now let us make a big event of this funeral. We'll bring a big cart, decorated cart, and then we have a music band, and we'll carry this to seashore and bury there. And we'll do that, all this. And you are there at the head of the procession, and everyone would understand that it's you. And this boy's face lit up. Oh, procession, decorated cart, and my turtle. Oh, that is being honored. That means I am being honored. We are going in a procession. Everyone is going to watch. He said, yes, let's do it. See, he reconciled immediately. A cart was brought, well decorated, music party was there, ready, and they went to bring this turtle. When I went there, turtle started moving, playing. You know, that way it didn't really die. It was completely still at that time. When it started moving, this boy was so upset. Everything is ready. Kill it. First kill it, then you can carry. We can carry to the seashore. Kill it. Now, you see what was in boy's mind. Was it love for turtle or the thrill that comes out of love for the turtle? All along, he thought that he was loving turtle. No. If it was real love, this thought even doesn't come. When he saw turtle moving, he would have been very happy. But he was more interested in this, all this hangama outside. And that he is going to miss or kill it. That is the desire. Desire for sense gratification. Desire to please the mind. Not exactly this genuine desire. Duryodhan did that again and again. For instance, he at least he thought was a good friend of Karna. Karna became his friend because he wanted some protection, Duryodhan. He could see the potential in Karna, who could stand up to Arjun. No one else could in his clan. So here is a possibility to stand Arjun. So he made a king instantaneously without knowing who Karna was. Instantaneously, with the very first meeting, he made him a king. So he would help him. And that was not love for him so much. It was love for his own desire. And Karna also, without knowing anything about Duryodhan, accepted it. Because that was going to satisfy his attachment, desire to prove that he was superior to Arjun. So it was a mutual arrangement like that, not the love. And we recall the incident of Ghatotkaj. During the war, Ghatotkaj, the son of Bhim, he was going berserk. He was killing so many people and no one could face him. That time, Duryodhan requested Karna, now use your astra, the missile, which you got from Devendra and kill him. Then Karna replies, no, I have saved this particular astra missile to use it against Arjun, who is the most powerful on the other side. Then Duryodhan instantaneously said that, no, this is the need of the hour now. If you don't do it, our friendship is not going to be anymore. That will end. Our friendship will end. He threatened him. And he knows very well, if Karna used this astra against Ghatotkaj, Karna would be vulnerable. He is losing his powers. Vulnerable. But that was not the interest of Duryodhan. Immediately he had to solve this problem. You could have used many other tricks. Aswatthama was there with so many weapons. Dronacharya was there, so many weapons. But no. Here. I mean, that is the desire. And even when he thinks that it's love, the background is the desire to satisfy his own. Next quality, krodh, anger. Anger is represented by Dushyasan. The very name itself, Dhu, Sasan. Dhu means hard. Sasan means control. Hard to control. That is anger. In second chapter, 63rd sloka, Bhagavan Krishna says, anger causes the wrongdoer to be enveloped in delusion, which then obscures memory of the correct behavior of the self, causing decay of the discriminative faculty. From this confusion of intelligence, annihilation of right behavior follows. I mean, it's degradation. It all starts from anger. In anger, it's possible we don't know what we are doing, what we are speaking. That means temporary. We are enveloped in delusion, loss of memory of right behavior and discriminative faculty. Like that, it leads. It's so dangerous. Even if anger is supposedly justified, so-called righteous anger, it must never take the place of calm, discriminative judgment and action. Sometimes we have to display anger, I would say, display, I mean, with our children, just to put them to right course of action. Or sometimes with our juniors, we may have to display some anger. No, it's just a display. Here I give an example. Once Guruji was unhappy with one devotee. He was giving instructions, you know, and the devotee was standing there at the in a corridor, at the end of that corridor. Guruji was walking towards him, making a face and saying, "No, no, this, that, etc." His face was red. Guruji's face was red, like full of anger, you know, very clear, angry. Guruji was not happy what has happened. So he was giving instruction, and after walking towards him, then he returned, he turned and returned, going other direction, full of smile. Devotee standing this side, they could see only full of smile. That means even while he was displaying his anger, he was fully in control of his emotions. And that anger he was displaying with one purpose. So that person realizes the gravity of the situation. I angered Gurudev. I will not do this again. To send that message that something wrong has happened, you realize it, acknowledge it. So that's why he displayed that anger, but completely in control of his emotions. Instantaneously he turns and smiles. I mean, that is righteous anger. I mean, sometimes it's required when we are dealing with children or juniors, etc. But not at the cost of that discrimination. And we should have control on emotions. The second warrior we have to face, Krodha. Next is lobh. Lobh is greed. Guruji writes, from childhood, most persons are conditioned to be governed by their ego and hence led by their feelings and guided by scheduled likes and dislikes. This enslavement to whims, likes and dislikes is lobha, greed. And here, we have to understand why likes and dislikes lead to greed. And greed is represented by karna and vikarna. Both together represent greed. We know karna represents attachment, likes. Vikarna represents repulsion, dislike. Together they represent lobh. I mean, how likes and dislikes, attachment and repulsion lead to greed? I would like to give one example. Say wealth. Quite often we see people having greed for wealth. How is it coming from likes and dislikes? Because there is a push-pull effect. It's push-pull effect. See, I want wealth. It has become almost natural because I have that attachment, like for comforts in life, luxuries, status, fame, etc. All these things can come from wealth, you know. My luxuries, comforts, name, status, all these come from wealth if I have. So these comforts, luxuries, etc., my attachment to these pull me towards that wealth. These attachments are pulling me towards wealth. At the same time, I have dislike, repulsion towards simplicity, poverty, you know, living a low profile life in the society. I have repulsion to this, and this repulsion here pushes me towards acquiring wealth. So the dislikes here, dislike for simplicity, poverty, etc., they push me towards wealth, and the attraction towards comforts and fame and name and status pull me towards acquiring wealth. The net effect is greed for wealth, more and more and more. So this push-pull effect, likes and dislikes, push us towards that greed for whatever that object may be. What is greed? Greed is acquisitiveness, possessing more and more, a confusion of mind between necessary necessities and unnecessary necessities. This is something which Guruji coined, necessary necessities and unnecessary necessities. They are originally unnecessary, but as we go along, they become so much necessary. Mind cannot distinguish, is it really required? I mean, that's coming from greed. Once we are in that mood of greed, we don't understand. For example, one common form of greed is for food. Sometimes I go on taking food, although my body doesn't need any more. I'm taking little more food, only to satisfy my tongue, taste buds. Instant gratification I need, forgetting the impact of taking that extra food, or sometimes even wrong food, forgetting the impact it's going to have on my health. That is greed. Greed for food, not that what is required, but I whether it is necessary or unnecessary, I don't even distinguish. Greed lead to stealing, dishonesty, cheating, self-surfeit at the expense of the well-being of others. We see this so much in the world. No? Is not the greed which leads to stealing, which leads to dishonesty? I mean, that's it. That greed can, you know, sometimes a person may ask, say maybe 10 rupees or 100 rupees. Maybe because he is in need of money, you know. Of course, we don't have to give him. It's not correct way. But still, you know, 10 rupees, okay, it's all right. But sometimes people demand 10 lakhs, a million rupees. That's not out of need. It's out of completely greed. That, look at dishonesty coming into picture because of greed. Greed for money. And in 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavan Krishna warns the devotee Arjuna, the threefold gate to hell is lust, anger and greed. Therefore, these must be abandoned. Lust, anger and greed, most dangerous enemies out of the six enemies. That is Duryodhan, Dushyasan, Karnavikan. Even Kurukshetra, we know that these are formidable enemies. Duryodhan, Dushyasan, Karna, Vikarna. We have to conquer them. I have one incident. This is a real life incident I would like to share. Way back in 1983, I was teaching a course at Concordia University, Montreal, Canada. I finished my course and then conducted an examination. After the exam, one student approached me. No, he pleaded, "Sir, I did not do exam well. If I fail, I will be thrown out of the course. I am already on probation. Last 2 years I have been, and this a particular test I am taking the third time, this subject. If I fail once again, I will be thrown out of the course and 2 years study would be wasted. I am on probation. Sir, please give me passing grade, that's C. A, B, C, D, we have grading system there. C grade you please give me. I didn't do well." I said, "I have not yet evaluated the scripts, let me see." Afterwards, when I was evaluating these answer scripts, this particular man did very bad, very bad. He deserved only a D, that means fail. But I remembered his face pleading. So I just added one mark here, two marks there, somehow I pushed him to C. Somehow, you know, okay, it's okay, C. And I forgot about it. A couple of days later, he again came back to me and said, "Sir, what happened to my exam?" Then I thought of giving self-confidence to him. To boost his morale, I said, "You did fairly well. On his own, you got grade C. I didn't have to do anything. You got on your own grade C. I wanted to know, give a boost to his self-confidence so that he would do better later. You did well. See, he was surprised. See, Swamiji, I know, sir, I got C. Yes. Then he said, sir, can you make it B? Immediately, yes, can you make it B? This time I was shocked. He knew very well that he didn't even deserve C. Somehow he got it. That was a need. C was need, but B was greed. Can you give me B immediately? I mean, that is greed. That is greed. We should always go by our needs, what we need, and also what we deserve. If you forget these two things, in daily life also, in daily life, greed sets in, and with greed comes so many other problems. So many other problems. Dishonesty, this and that, comparison, so many things can come. So let's be watchful. Next, moha. That is delusion, of course, represented by Shakuni. We know Shakuni was the maternal uncle of Kauravas, Duryodhan, Dushyasan, Vikarn, and all those 100 brothers. He was their mother's brother, maternal. Param Suganji said, moha is represented by Shakuni, noted for winning battles through deceptive bewilderment of his opponents. When the symbology of the characters is understood, the meaning of the allegory cannot be missed. And we know the part played by Shakuni in Mahabharata. In a way, he was the root cause. Deceptive means. He played the game of dice, and Pandavas lost everything they had. That he is the one. He was not straightforward. He was not honest. By all, you know, deceiving them in the game of dice, he threw them out. And that is temptation, a form of delusion, of course. Yudhishthir yielded to temptation. Isn't it true? That's how he went into the game of dice. It was tempting and lost. Now, tell me, who killed Shakuni? Who overpowered Shakuni eventually? It was not Arjun or Bhim. Shakuni was killed by Sahadev, the youngest of the Pandavas. Sahadev represents Yama. Yama means the power to resist. No, power to resist evil. That is Yama. Niyama is the power to follow the good path, niyamas. Yama is the power to resist. So eventually, temptation was conquered by the power to resist. I mean, it, very true. I mean, very clear here. That is why Guruji advised that if we don't have the willpower, develop want power. Want power. The want power is the power to resist, and that is one which can take us away from temptation. It's like this. Suppose something is happening. It's a very tempting situation. There is a very tempting situation. If we say it's all right, I have enough willpower, I can still be around. We don't know when our willpower will be lost. Self-control will be lost. In that, if you don't have full self-control, best is say, I won't. Get out of the situation. Later you can figure out. When calmness returns, when you are in a better peaceful environment, you could think about it. Pros and cons of that particular activity or whatever. If you are still there in that environment where there is so much temptation and sometimes very difficult to conquer, we may fall prey. We may fall prey. So let us develop at least own power. Eventually, that Yama was the one who conquered the temptation, Shakuni. You know, many addicts, those who are addicted to, you know, various substances, they said the same thing initially. I will not be an addict. I have the willpower. I am just trying this for fun. Just fun, for once or twice. I'm just trying this. And we don't know where it leads to. Everyone tried only for fun in the beginning. All these, all the addictive substances. If only that person had that won't power, no, I don't need to try this. Won't power, get out of the situation, get out of the environment. That is what we have to do. Now, there is another advice which says that don't tempt temptation to tempt you. Don't tempt temptation to tempt you. It could be anything, addiction, it could be some other action, it could be food, or it could be anything, any of the senses. I mean, it could happen even with TV. Oh, just 10 minutes I'll sit there. Very tempting. That 10 minutes could be an hour and a half. Tempting. So best is willpower. If you don't have willpower, at least won't power, come out. So we have to be constantly on the guard if you have to be happy in this life. Discrimination is required. Next, madha, meaning pride. Pride is represented by Shalya. Shalya was the maternal uncle of Nakul Sahadev. And maternal uncle of even other all Pandavas in a way. Because Nakul Sahadev's mother was Madri, whose brother was Shalya. Guruji wrote, pride here means that love for the I or ego self that is constantly on the defensive or offensive to support and promote the interests of self. I mean, all the time it's me, I am superior. That pride, again, it could be very subtle, very subtle. Because of pride, within the ego, there arises arrogance, conceit, haughtiness, wanton lust after the desires, interest and demands of I, me and mine. Isn't it true? I am superior. Me, people come to me because I am greater. Mine, my house is better. I, me and mine. Shalya was the maternal uncle of Pandavas, and he started from his kingdom, Madra kingdom, to join Pandavas in the Kurukshetra war, to help Pandavas, he started. But on the way, Duryodhan played tricks and bribed him with gifts and flattery, and eventually turned him against Pandavas and enlisted him in his support. I mean, this what can happen if there is pride in man? Guruji says, thus does egoistic pride often turn man's head and feet in the wrong direction. This man, Shalya, with good intention he started to help Pandavas, but he turned in the wrong direction and went to Kauravas because of the pride. Pride makes the egotistical man consciously or unconsciously try to cut off the heads of others to make himself appear taller. It likes to belittle or humiliate others, to gloat on their mistakes and discomfiture, and to gossip and criticize. I mean, yes, pride is that. One is, I am better, I am superior, I am richer, I am this, I am that, I am more powerful, I am more skillful. At the same time, that person is weaker, that person is worse, he is inferior to me. I mean, that is also there, both. I am better and he is worse. And you can always see something in others to criticize, gossip, everything coming from pride. And Guruji wants, even spiritual people may fall from a great position of advancement, they may fall if pride is there. And the greater the good in man, the more there is to be proud about, increasing the chance of succumbing to egoistic pride. Cunning indeed are the traps of delusion. Cunning indeed are traps of delusion. I mean, if you are a better person, there is a greater possibility of being proud. So watch out, watch out. If there is pride, there cannot be God and God's mercy. God's mercy, Guruji said that, you know, it is collected in the valleys of humility, not on the mountain tops of pride. You know, water gets collected only in the valleys, not on the mountain top. This is pride, that is humility. Now, Shalya, let's go to Kurukshetra war. In the initial days of Kurukshetra war, Shalya killed Uttar Kumar. Uttar Kumar was the son of Virat. Virat represents Samadhi. Offspring of Samadhi is joy. Is joy. When you meditate, you go into that Samadhi state, and where you feel the joy in meditation. And that is the offspring of Samadhi, Virat. But Shalya killed him, because if there is pride, there is no joy. Pride can kill the result of your good meditation too. If you are very proud, that affects the result of your meditation. The joy is gone. Pride kills the joy, as Shalya killed the son of Virat. Now, can you tell me who killed Shalya? Eventually, Shalya was killed, but who killed? Yudhishthir. Yudhishthir killed Shalya. Yudhishthir represents that calmness, born of stillness, then the deep silence, that calmness. He killed pride, because in that stillness within, in that calmness, there is no room for pride. And I would like to read out something Guruji wrote in Metaphysical Meditations about, here Paramji is writing about silence. He said, "My silence, like an expanding sphere, spreads everywhere. My silence spreads like a wildfire of bliss. The dark thickets of sorrow and the tall oaks of pride are all burning up." See, my silence means that the deep silence, Guruji is talking about the deep silence, not just silence of mere silence of vocal cords. That is much deeper. Thoughts have to be silent, emotions have to be silent, all senses have to be silent. That is the deeper silence Guruji is talking about, that stillness, calmness. It spreads like a wild fire of bliss, and it burns the thickets of sorrow and tall oaks of pride, all burning up. Because in that, it's very easy to visualize this, feel. Those of us who meditate can feel that when there is joy of meditation, that joy comes with a sense of gratitude, not with a sense of pride, I'm having joy. No, you are so grateful, you are so humble. It comes with that sense of gratitude. And there's no room for pride, it's gone. Even if you have pride otherwise during the day, at the end of meditation, when you are enjoying that calmness, there is no pride. And this understanding that I am a part of God, I am a part of Satchidanand, Anand, that joy, it comes with a sense of humility, not that I am God or I am powerful. No, it comes with understanding that everything is God, including this little self. It's God that's manifesting everywhere. I mean, it comes with a sense of gratitude and humility, not that I have now knowledge, I have gained spiritual knowledge. It doesn't go well. It doesn't last long. So pride can never be the quality of a spiritual person. That has to be. And that may be there, you know. Sometimes when you see people, we may be thinking that they are not all that spiritual. You know, that pride. I am more spiritual. I spend more time in spiritual pursuits, meditational practices, whereas they are spending time, wasting their time. That is pride. That is pride. Have understanding. Have understanding. Never pride in your achievements and your actions. I mean, that doesn't go with the spiritual life. Very simple. Very simple. Pride. I have a short story. There was one very rich person, very rich, very comfortable. All his life, he was very comfortable, made a name, and towards the end, he was bedridden. He thought that his end is nearing, and he introspected and thought that, okay, material achievements were there, but I never prayed. I never gave attention to God, religion. I think this is the time now I should start praying, make acquaintance with God. And a very sincere desire, that understanding dawned on him. Then he said, he felt that I don't know how to pray. I don't know how to involve in any spiritual practices. But I know my servant, the Prabhakar, he is very good at it. I see him regularly spending time in pujas, worship, this and praying. I will ask his advice. So he asked, Prabhakar, I am almost at the end of my life. I want to pray. Please teach me how to pray, how to worship. He said, Master, it's very simple. Please go to your cow shed, goshala. There, bend on your knees. And with folded hands and bent head, sincerely say, Lord, I surrender to you. This man said, what? I have to go to cow shed, goshala, there kneel in mud and stinking place. I cannot go. Even if I did, what would my neighbors think? They're all seeing, watching me, there kneeling in mud in goshala. For praying. Impossible. I can't do it. I can't do it. No, not. This is not the way. He just rejected the offer. Prabhakar said, as you wish, and went away. And this man continued his thinking. After a couple of months, he thought, what? There is no peace of mind for me. Maybe I have to do that. I have to go to cow shed, there I have to kneel. Probably that is the only way to approach God. Then he called for Prabhakar and said, Prabhakar, please take me to cow shed. I am ready to kneel in mud and pray. Then Prabhakar said, Master, not necessary. Your willingness to go there to cow shed and kneel there in mud, your willingness to do that is enough. God would be very pleased. You can pray right here. You bend here and do right here. I mean, that's what he said. That willingness, all along it's pride. I have a status. I cannot do this. What would neighbors think? I mean, that's pride. It was all in mind. When he cleared that in mind, I'm just a child of God as anyone else. There's nothing like superior or inferior, especially when it comes to praying. If he had that, when he understood that, it was really not required to go there. I mean, this is the understanding he had to receive, not to go to cow shed or not. That willingness is important. This came after he conquered pride. He conquered his pride. That willingness was there and the result was there. Freedom from the chain of pride, you know, it was holding him. I mean, let us also understand, when we have to be proud, if at all. Sometimes we are very proud of the achievement of children, achievement of our nation. Well, that's fine. That's a positive thing, actually. It's not like being proud in God's eyes. No. But I would like to warn you something. Their willingness to go there was adequate, he was told. It doesn't mean that willingness to meditate is adequate. There you have to sit down and meditate. This is only to willingness to go there all the way there. That was willingness. Not that I have willingness to meditate, but I can't meditate. That doesn't work that way. Okay. Next, the sixth enemy, Matsarya, jealousy, represented by Kritavarma. Kritavarma was a Yadava king who fought for Duryodhan against Pandavas, because the bride he wanted to marry was taken to the kingdom of Krishna and married to Krishna. So he was jealous of Krishna. He was jealous of Krishna, and eventually he landed up fighting against Krishna for Kauravas. Guruji wrote, Matsarya or ego envy, in its full implication, incites the lust or desire. It makes one to forget his true duty, those actions that are correct for his own soul evolution, and creates in him longings to imitate the position of others, that he might be or have that what has roused envy in him. We can understand jealousy. We also go through that, thoughts of jealousy. But if it's instant, just for an instant, if thought of jealousy comes, it's fine. We have conquered it. But if you harbor it, then it becomes a very negative force inside. And your behavior won't be normal, especially to that particular person about whom you are envy about, or with others also. Your behavior is not normal. Because of circumstances, sometimes a thought may come. But conquer it immediately. No, it's not wise. See, Kritavarma was one of the three Kaurava warriors who survived. He was not killed. Kripacharya, Ashwatthama, and Kritavarma. Does it mean that even after self-realization, jealousy is going to be there? No. We have to understand it in the right perspective. What is jealousy? I am jealous of someone when that someone has something which I want and I don't have. Then only I am jealous of him. I am not jealous of some millionaire, because I never think of becoming a millionaire. I am not. But I may be jealous of someone who has something which I want but I don't have. You know, that then only the jealousy comes. In self-realization, when one with God, I have everything that I can imagine in this creation. I have everything, one with God, that love, joy, wisdom. Everything I have, there is nothing which I don't have and other person has. So there is no room for jealousy. It's just powerless. That quality is there, still in the ether, but powerless. Because I have no thought of having anything which other person has, which I don't have at this point. I have everything. One with God, I self-realized, nothing here we are missing. So Kritavarma, although he didn't die, it's all right. He's not going to disturb us anymore. So that's about six qualities mentioned in this ninth sloka. Kama, krodha, moha, mada, lobha, mada, mascharya. Lust, anger, greed, temptation, jealousy, pride. These six. Now, why do we have to study so much about these negative qualities? And sometimes it's painful to see that there are some traces of these qualities within sometimes. Why do you have to study this? And Guruji has explained beautifully in at the end of this explanation of ninth sloka, he goes into this. Guruji wrote, "It is necessary to understand and uproot the picketing of ego consciousness and its various tendencies which preclude familiarity with the true self." I mean, that is the basis. As long as we have these negative inclinations, as long as they come into, you know, come to surface in our life, then we are mortals. We forget about immortal nature because we are in the realm of mortality. This, so we have to understand them and remove from our consciousness. And Guruji gives the gives guidelines how to go about it. The aspiring yogi should always bear in mind when he feels angry, that's not me. When you are angry, say that's not me, that's a Kaurava to be eliminated. That's not me, that's not my true nature. No. When his self-possession is being overpowered by lust or greed, he should say to himself, that's not me. This is some greed in me. This is some strong lust in me. No, that's a Kaurava. When hatred tries to obscure his real nature with a mask of ugly emotion, he should forcefully dissociate himself from it. That's not me. Hatred. If some hatred comes in my mind against anyone, hatred, no, that's not me. That's an enemy. He learns to shut doors of his consciousness against all undesirable visitors seeking lodging within. And whenever the devotee has been used or abused by others, and yet he feels within a stirring of the Holy Spirit of forgiveness and love, he can then affirm with conviction, that is me. That is my real nature. When you have that a sense of forgiveness in spite of what he has done, when it's okay, let me forgive. When that forgiveness comes, say, that is me. That is my real nature. Whenever you feel some love for others or a sense of service to downtrodden, say, that is me. That is a Pandava in me. Recognize it and support and affirm. Cultivate this. Guruji ends this ninth sloka. Yoga meditation is the process of cultivating and stabilizing the awareness of one's real nature through definite spiritual and psychophysiological methods and laws by which the narrow ego is displaced by the consciousness of the soul. That is the entire exercise is all about, to replace the consciousness of ego by soul consciousness. Here, we have discussed about various Kaurava warriors and Pandava warriors and what they represent, etc. There is one warning. The characters are not arbitrarily chosen to represent various psychological traits. They are not arbitrarily chosen. I mean, attach anger to this person, attach devotion to this person, etc. No, they were chosen understanding the Sanskrit root meaning of the name of the person and or the part played by that person in Mahabharata. For example, Dushyasan, his name itself suggests that it's anger. Dushyasan, hard to control, anger. Duryodhan, now we have seen what the role he was playing, the desire for control, the desire to oppress other people, the desire, he is king material desire, controlling everyone. The true way to understand a scripture is through intuition. Attuning oneself to the inner realization of truth, we should not be misled by enthusiasm and the imaginative habit of trying to squeeze spiritual significance from every word or statement or event. I mean, this is what sometimes we tend to do. So much is happening, they are definitely meaningful, all that is explained in the book, and trying to extract spiritual meaning, you know, squeeze spiritual meaning from every character, every word or incident that happened in Mahabharata. That is over enthusiasm. It's not needed. It's intellectual, just intellectual gimmicks, that's all. What is required is understand the good inclinations and bad inclinations, and how to support and cultivate the good inclinations so that we have a life free from pain and suffering, leading to lasting happiness. And evil tendencies, realize them. You can relate to Kauravas, it's easy to recognize that way. But not trying to squeeze some meaning out of everything that has happened in Mahabharata. Sometimes it may appear to be overwhelming. Overwhelming. Now, if I analyze dispassionately, there are too many Kaurava warriors in me. Either too many or sometimes too strong. That particular Dushyasana may be too strong in me. The short-temperedness may be there, anger. There may be too many or too strongly. And on the other hand, I may not be fully happy with my Pandava soul forces. They are not so strong, they are not so many. But there is no room for discouragement, no room. And this is very clear in next sloka, 10th. I just read out the sloka, I don't go into details. Here, Duryodhana continues. After explaining Pandavas and then Kauravas, Duryodhana tells his guru Dronacharya, "These our forces, protected by Bhishma, are unlimited, but may be insufficient. Whereas their army, defended by Bhima, is limited, but quite adequate." Meaning, numbers wise, Kauravas outnumbered Pandavas. That so many and so powerful. They may be limitless, but may be inadequate. And even in the heart of hearts, Duryodhana also realized that, because Pandavas are on the righteous side there, and Bhagavan Krishna was there. So same thing with us. There may be too many negative qualities. Doesn't matter. Because in the divine order, in God's creation, His wish is that you win and I win. I mean, that's not only my wish and your wish, our Guru's wish, it is the wish of God. That's cosmic design. Eventually, each one of us will be able to conquer the negative tendencies inside and have that lasting happiness and eventually self-realization. That is for sure. It's just a question of when, not whether. So that's why we are involved in this sadhana, spiritual sadhana, so that we hasten our progress. Because as long as we are not in that spiritual consciousness, as long as we are not progressing spiritually, we are suffering. Whatever disappointments in life we have, these are all result of that mortal consciousness rather than divine consciousness. So let us hasten the process. Let's get serious about it. I have to eliminate these. I have to eliminate these negative tendencies. There is one story. After Kurukshetra war, Pandavas were unhappy with what happened, because war you know, it was a battle where their own relatives, friends were killed. They were unhappy. They thought of going for a pilgrimage and taking holy dip in many sacred rivers so that to wash out their some of their sins accrued in a battle. It happens always. Negative vibrations, to wash out negative vibrations. So they want to take holy dip in many rivers and pilgrimages, have darshan. They went to Bhagavan Krishna and asked him, we are going on a pilgrimage to wash away our sins, to get rid of these negative vibrations and this discomfort, you know, mental discomfort. Please accompany us. Krishna said, no, I cannot go with you, but in my place, I give you this bitter gourd, Karela, bitter gourd. You take this, and in whichever river you are taking bath, this also dip on my behalf. Please bring it back to me. Pandavas went river after river, you know, different pilgrim centers they visited all over the country, and everywhere, wherever they were taking bath, they also gave a bath to this bitter gourd, Karela. They dipped in that holy waters and they came, returned. And when they met Bhagavan Krishna, he said, what happened to my bitter gourd? Did you give it a good dip everywhere? He said, yes, in all rivers, here is it. Bhagavan Krishna took that and cut into pieces. And he gave one piece each to each of the Pandavas. Say, please taste it. They tasted, said, it's bitter. What? It's still bitter. But it took bath in so many sacred rivers. But just taking dip in rivers, bitterness won't go. There lies the solution, the point. Just taking bath in different rivers, even negative vibrations won't go so easily. Just taking bath, you have to go through a process. The bitter gourd has to go through a process to lose its bitterness. Isn't it true? You have to cook. You have to boil, do something. Then bitterness is gone and becomes edible without that bitterness. Similarly, if you want to get rid of the negative vibrations, whatever has accrued with all these negative influences, it's not just enough to go to places and having sacred dips. It's very good. That gives us some strength. That gives us some inspiration. But what is more important is go through a process so that you can get rid of these negative tendencies and negative vibrations. That is yoga meditation. That is yoga meditation. There is no escape. You do whatever, something, some, if not yoga meditation, some other technique, some other puja, some other worship, something. This is where we actually involving self. It's not externally doing something that can get rid of it. The external things will help us to inspire, but that's not adequate. We have to do that. And you and I are fortunate. We are really fortunate because we know what to do. Having come to the feet of a Sadguru, Paramahansa Yogananda, he has given us, for instance, apart from scientific meditations, he also given us many other techniques like affirmations, visualizations, devotional songs, cosmic chants. So many things he has given us. By following this, practicing them, we get rid of the negative tendencies, negative vibrations, and we progress. So we are fortunate. And Guru Paramahansa Yogananda's teachings have been compiled in the form of lessons, what we call Yoga Sasanga lessons. These lessons, they are initially basic lessons of 18. They contain the information about how to meditate. Not only how to meditate, also other things that are required for harmonious development of body, mind and soul, cultivating good tendencies and getting rid of evil inclinations. All that is there here. And anyone interested can read these lessons by subscribing to them. Either you can read printed matter or you can also read on a digital app, soft copy. That is also possible. The information is available on the screen now. So you can take down in case you are not yet received. If you want to receive, that is possible. Wherein all these principles are explained. So remember one thing. All this exercise is to realize one thing. Aham Brahmasmi. Fundamental truth. I am Brahman. I am a spark of that divinity. To realize this, we do this. One more thing. It is, even if God realization, self-realization is not our goal, we must remember that the aim of life is to be free from pain and suffering and to get anchored to perpetual happiness. No one can deny this. I want to be joyful perpetually, always. No one can deny that. Even that perpetual happiness is achievable through following the scientific principles of meditation, right behavior and right activity. All these things are needed. We explain your Satsanga lessons. Now, I would like to close with one affirmation. And this is the fifth talk in the series. With this, we conclude the first 9 slokas of the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which discuss one point, that is the opposing forces within, Pandavas and Kauravas within, the soul discriminative tendencies and those negative inclinations which impede my spiritual progress. Both we have studied. That is one section. I would like to close our session with an affirmation. Affirmation, again a technique given by Paramahansa Yogananda to realize some fundamental truths. When we affirm, we take the statement and repeat it until it goes within and becomes a part of our system. We normally start repeating aloud a few times, then softly, and then in whisper, and then mentally. Like that we go on doing it. I will have to read out this poem written by Paramahansa Yogananda, and then I take out only 2 lines which will repeat as affirmation. The poem is this. Of course, this is addressing God. This should remind us ourselves of our divine nature. Thy cosmic life and I are one. Thou art the spirit and I am all nature. We are one. Thou art the ocean and I am the wave. We are one. Thou art the flame, I am the spark, we are one. Thou art the flower, and I am the fragrance, we are one. Thou art all laughter, and I am a smile, we are one. Thy joy and I are one. Thy wisdom and I are one. Thy love and I are one. That is why thou and I are one. Thou and I were one, and thou and I will be one evermore. This is only a part of the poem. Now we'll take the last 2 lines and repeat. Let us sit in meditation posture, spine straight, gaze upwards, closing eyes. Let's repeat after me. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Thou and I are one. Thou and I were one. Thou and I will be one. Let us repeat mentally a few times, observing the meaning, feeling the meaning behind these words, addressing to Divine Beloved. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Jai Guru, thank you for being with me in all these talks. Jai Guru.